Hello, everybody. Ed here. Welcome to our call. We're going to get started here in a minute or two. Let's see who's here so far. Jennifer, welcome. Laura, good to see you. Michael, Randy, Terry, Tabor. Hey, welcome, guys. Welcome. All right, let's get things going here. Hey, just for fun, while we're waiting for everyone to join, let me know in the chat area where you're calling from today and how hot is it where you are. And please tell me you're not somewhere that actually is experiencing fall weather right now, because I'm going to be very, very jealous. High here in Atlanta is going to be about 90. Today is ridiculous. Let us know in the chat box. Laura says, South Arkansas, 72 degrees. That's not bad. That's not terrible. Randy says, Pompano Beach, 87. Ouch. That's kind of like what we're having, Randy. We are, let's see where we are right now. We are about 84 right now. Feels like 87. Jennifer says, I'm calling from Baltimore. It's going to be almost 90 here. Yay. Too bad I'm stuck inside. Well, too good you're stuck inside. I wouldn't want to be in 90-degree weather right now. Michael says, Eaton Rapids, Michigan, 68. Temperature going down. Great Falls, leaves on the outside. My way. Oh, so jealous. Michael, you guys get you get to enjoy the fall weather as you should. Santa Fe, New Mexico, Terry, currently 68 degrees, today 76 degrees. Welcome, Terry. Matthew, good to see you here. Susan, welcome. Andrea, hello. Western Oregon, 55 degrees, says Tabor. Tabor, are you rubbing that in? Not cool. All right. Good stuff, guys. All right. Let's go ahead and get started. And as usual, I'd like to just start things off on a positive note. So in the chat box, type in a capital W for me. And then let me know about a recent win that you've had. Now, I just want to remind you that a win can be anything you feel good about, any kind of progress, big or small. You define what makes it a win, but just let me know by typing that W first, just so I know that's what you're referring to, and let me know about a win you've enjoyed. It could be anything from making progress through the program to getting a good insight to one of the sessions. Maybe you finalize your positioning. Maybe you get your website up. Maybe you got a response from a prospect. It could be anything. I mean, of course, if you've landed your first paying client recently, that's definitely a win, but it could be anything big or small. Laura says, website finished minus some testimonials. Fantastic, Laura. Great, I saw your note about that. That's now you're down to the home stretch, right? That's the easier part. Susan, submitted web copy, working through Susan's suggestions, great feedback. Awesome, glad to hear that was helpful. Cynthia, proofreading website copy about to post for review this afternoon. All right, congratulations. Way to move forward. Jennifer, posted my website, updated my LinkedIn profile, started updating my social pages. Excellent. Way to continue to make progress, Jennifer. That's excellent. Tabor, finally got web copy in for review. Yeah, and great job, Tabor. Hope my feedback was helpful. Randy, poured coals on the email train. Now we're cooking with grease. There you go. Corey, great call with potential clients and a rough proposal and waiting for a response. Oh, that's awesome. So nerve-wracking, right? When you put it out there, now you're waiting to see what they're going to say, and then your mind starts racing. Matthew says, sent out 10 cold emails this week. Feel really good about that, as you should, Matthew. Fantastic. That's a huge step. So congrats on getting that done. Any more wins? Let's see. Francis, enrolled in a program for SEO certification. Excellent. Good stuff, guys. Good stuff. All right. And then one last thing before we get to questions. I'm curious, and some of you have already shared that with me, but type in a capital I and let me know what you're currently implementing in the program. Okay, so if you haven't already shared that with me, capital I, and let me know what you're currently deploying, what you're focused on right now. Corey is asking Francis which program that SEO certification was. He's just curious. So let us know or let him know, Francis, if you don't mind. All right. So again, what are you implementing right now? I see a lot of websites, see a lot of prospecting. Michael says list of names and contact information. Excellent. Randy, pro bono offers to get initial momentum. Absolutely. By the way, Corey, Francis, the program he enrolled on is Heather Lloyd Martin's program. I believe that's through AWAI. Jennifer is working on session 4, working on the prospecting list. One quick tip for you guys who are doing on that, just remember, it's much better to rapid prototype with that, ready, fire, aim. So in other words, 1, 2, or 3 prospects and get those emails out the door. Then put 1, 2, or 3 more together and then get those out the door. Much more efficient and much more effective to do it that way as opposed to trying to build a list of 10 or 20. And there's a big reason, but there's a couple of really big reasons for that. Let me just give you one of them. Once you find somebody, it's very natural to go into their website and find, learn a little bit more about them and what they're doing. And usually through that process, you're going to come up with a couple of things that could be great, meaningful connections in your email. If all you do is then put them in a spreadsheet, to add to your list to come back later and draft the email, you would have missed the opportunity to, take advantage of what you found. Right there. Many times it's much more efficient while you're thinking about it, while it's fresh, go ahead and type up your email and get it out the door. Okay. So I'm not saying you should do it one at a time. I think it's okay to do 2 or 3 before you go ahead and do that, but give that a try as well for those of you who are working through that. Laura is finishing session 3. Matthew's going through the LinkedIn training from Susan. Excellent. Cynthia is networking with prospective clients, website copy, creating samples. Good stuff, Cynthia. And Corey is prospecting and follow-ups. Excellent. All right, guys. Good stuff. I love to see the momentum you have. That's very encouraging. So let's get to some coaching conversations. What do you need help with today? Type in a capital Q, as in question, and let me know if you have a question, if you need something that you need some feedback on, if you want to talk through a specific situation. The ground rules are very straightforward. Just keep your question focused and specific, because if you give me a question such as, well, you know, how do I find clients, that's a big topic, okay? So give me something specific in terms of getting clients that you're struggling with. One question per person. Don't worry. If you have another one, I can come back to you. I just want to give everyone a shot early on. And then if applicable, tell me what one or two options you're considering. So if it's the kind of situation where you're thinking about 2 different options, 3 different options, share that with me just so I have some context and I can give you better feedback. We can have a much more productive conversation. While you're doing that, I'm also going to check to see if there are any pre-submitted questions. And there was one from Francis. So let me go ahead and address that first. And then I see that Matthew's got a question. Matthew, you pre-posted your question. Where did you post it, Matthew? I don't see it. On the Q&A page. Did you post it in the forum? Just let me know. And by the way, just a reminder, guys, if you want to pre-submit a question, the the place to do that is on the call page inside the program. Now, if you're going to be in the call, if you know you're going to be in the call, there's no need to do that, right? Because you can just ask your question live. But this is a great option for those of you who know or may not be on the call or may have to leave early or you're not sure if you're going to be on the call or not. I don't see it. I just see Francis's question. Do me a favor. I think you might be right. I'm just looking at the wrong page. I'm sorry. Hold on. Let me, September. You know what? I think this is just mislabeled. Just bear with me, guys. I found it, Matthew. Sorry about that. And I was on the wrong page. I got one from Carmen, one from Matthew, one from Deb. So let me address those first, and we'll go back and forth here. All right. Carmen says, I've submitted my draft, and I've been trimming down the content as listed in the handouts. While reviewing the remaining content, I might have to cut out too much. It may look like a rookie writer, since which I am not sure I would hire myself. It sounds as if I'm not trusting the process. My question is, have you heard this before from someone who does not have professional writing experience samples? I may be a fool, but I trust that I can do a good job if I can get my foot in the door, even without professional writing experience. All right, so Carmen, if you, let me see if you're on the call. I don't know if I see you here. If you're on the call, just go ahead and just type in something in the chat box and let me know. Because I need a little bit of clarification. So I'm going to make some assumptions if I don't hear from you. The first assumption I'm going to make is that when you said I submitted my draft, that you're talking about your website copy. Because I mean, you didn't specifically say that, but based on the context, I'm just assuming that. So I think what Carmen's question is really about is I'm nervous that I don't have professional writing experience, and I feel like a fraud. I feel like an imposter. I feel like I really shouldn't be doing this, and I don't belong. And you know, who am I to try to go after some writing clients? And Carmen, you should know that this is a common concern. Okay, I would say 90% of writers who are launching a writing business as a freelancer struggle with that issue. I call it the imposter syndrome. And if it makes you feel any better, again, 90% of them do, and this should make you feel better. Established writers who have been doing this for a long time on their own often feel that way. I'm talking, you know, 70, 80%. Okay. At some point, they feel like they're unqualified and somebody's going to find them out. And it's crazy. If you saw the level of experience we're talking about here, I mean, you should see the conversations I have with some of my peers who have been doing this for a long time. And when they open up and we have a very honest and raw conversation, and they open up and become vulnerable and just share these concerns, you would be shocked. These are people who have been doing this for a very, very long time. I say all that just to so you guys understand that, look, the imposter syndrome is something that you don't have, you're going to continue to deal with. Okay, it's very common to feel that now, but don't feel that once you're at a certain level you are immune from that, because it will always be a challenge. It's always going to show up. It's very common. This is a big topic, and I'm certainly not a therapist, but as someone who deals with this frequently, what I can tell you is one of the things that has helped me the most is knowing that others deal with this, even who are more experienced than I am, makes me feel a lot better about it. That shared experience, in other words, that knowledge that this is common and many of us are struggling or often struggle with this, that makes me feel better because I know that it's not me. It's just a natural part of the process. So the way I think of it, when I start feeling that tension and that stress and, oh my God, what am I doing? I'm in over my head. Who am I? Who do I think I am to be doing this? I try to detach myself from it and I just say, okay, I get it. This is coming back. you're there. I kind of think of it as a person, as a little demon, and I just acknowledge it. And something about just acknowledging and being okay with that little demon in the room takes its power and its grip away. Okay, so just know, Carmen. Listen, you're not alone. Very common, and it's not going to end even once you have more experience. We all start somewhere, and believe me, even the people you look at out there and you admire who are doing really, really well as freelance writers and copywriters still struggle with it, and they started where you are, okay? Very, very few people started with a huge track record as a writer. Many people just started from scratch. Okay, so I'll take Matthew's question and then Deb, and then we'll go to those who these are pre-submitted. So Matthew, let's see. So I'm at the stage where I'm sending out cold emails to what I believe should be my target niche, but this is where I feel a little bit unsure about things. So because I'm writing in the hospitality technology field, I'm inclined to want to send emails to companies who provide services in this area, such as software companies providing technological solutions, which is who I've been sending the emails to. But due to my inexperience, I wonder if instead of focusing on companies, should I be focusing on blogs and other content providers, trying to figure out if it makes a big difference and which way should I focus my time and attention. Thanks in advance. Okay, good stuff. Let me see if I find you here, Matthew. Let me bring you in. Hey, Matthew, you're unmuted. How are you?
Hey, Ed, I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing well. Good to talk to you. So you're going after, technology providers, but you're trying to figure out, okay, besides that, should I also go after content providers such as bloggers in that industry?
Yep, that's it.
Okay. Which, can you give me an example? So what those bloggers, who would their audience be?
Those bloggers, their audience would be around the same type of people that would probably go towards the content that is written by the, the service providers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just that fear, sometimes that fear that just has me unsure of which one to approach.
Well, here's what I would say. It's if you could, my concern is you're really diluting your efforts in a way, because okay, those would not be the people who would hire you directly. So are you thinking, hey, maybe I can write for them and then that exposure in their blog could eventually lead to some prospects in that industry contacting me? Is that maybe kind of the way you're thinking about it?
Yeah, that's the way I was thinking about it. Would that exposure help me if I become known as a writer who's written on some of the, some of the more upkept blogs in the niche?
Yeah. I think that would be, so guys, let me just kind of bring this to one level up. The question here is, should I go after direct clients or should I also be going against content providers who, if I were to write for them, I could expose my name to potential direct clients? And I think the answer just overall for anyone who's considering that strategy is that could work later down the line.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, what is your goal? You're trying to get results as quickly as possible. That particular strategy takes a lot of time and effort. And even once you land it, there's no assurance that some of these prospects, some of these potential clients would contact you. So it's a lot of work for a very future potential payoff. And right now, I'm thinking you got limited time and resources. You want to dedicate all those time and resources to really focusing those efforts. So if it were me, I would just use all that time to go after direct clients. Now, one thing you could do and I talk about this in session 8, is to go after marketing firms, marketing agencies that target the hospitality industry.
Okay.
And position yourself as someone who knows this industry, has mm-hmm. been in it for a long time, immersed in it, and would love the opportunity to maybe write for them, for one of their clients. Because marketing companies, marketing firms, they're constantly, first of all, they have a steady stream of work, and much of it involves some writing, and they're not all going to have, in fact, most of them are not going to have staff writers. So most of them are used to working with freelancers, outside writers. So if you position yourself as someone who already knows the industry, it can help them from a writing standpoint. You could become one of their go-to writers. And they're bringing you the work. You see what I'm saying? Because you're writing for their yeah. clients.
Yeah.
So that, yeah. I mean, if I were to do something that's not direct clients, I would rather see you do that than the other strategy with bloggers.
I got you.
Yeah.
All right.
So try that. And I talk about it in session 8, I believe, and show you how to position yourself. You're still going to be emailing them. It's just a slightly different message.
Because I yeah. would assume then if I do begin reaching out to marketing firms that market for, you know, in that arena, then I assume then I would have to do some pro bono work in terms of getting samples, because, you know, I went through all of the exercises and stuff like that, and I did have samples from before when I was mainly focusing on the digital marketing before I decided to move over to hospitality technology. So I don't actually have any samples of hospitality technology work as yet. So mm-hmm. that's another thing that I was wondering if at some point should I cut some hours to begin working on samples. I haven't been, because I've just been focusing recently on sending out the emails. So I really haven't been focusing much on anything else but that. So I was just wondering if then I would need to start looking at samples. But I do think that you know, just to cement things, that I would continue to focus on sending out emails to the companies that provide the, you know, the technological solutions. And in the training, I know you had said about even if you do pro bono work, then have that conversation after contact is made. The initial contact is made from the core emailing. So then I would need to decide then if, once I make contact, should I suggest that I do some pro bono work, or should I just charge them a much lower fee than would be expected for the once I, you know, do have that.
Yeah, yeah.
That experience behind.
So, Matthew, what you're going to want to do at that point is go in, and with agencies, the great thing is they're just going to know what they want to pay you.
Yeah.
They're just going to offer you something. And what is probably going to turn out to be is an agency who's not going to be willing to pay you very much. But that's
yeah.
okay. That works out well, because what you want is not necessarily income right now. Is
yeah.
just the ability to get some experience, get some samples. So
yeah.
that could
yeah.
be a great win-win. I would just not worry about it. Let them tell you what they can pay. And
yeah.
just accept it, and then you can build on that, you know, with other clients.
Yeah.
So, yeah, one step at a time, you know, one
yeah.
step at a time. Don't worry about samples right now. Just
mm-hmm.
all you're looking for, Matthew, right now is someone who's willing to give you a shot based on what they see today,
yeah.
based on what you have available right now. If they need more than that right now, that's okay. But that also means they're just not a good prospect for you today. They might be in 3 months, just not today. Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Good stuff. You bet. All right, and let me address Debs, and then Deb, I got your note here in the chat that I know you're at the office, and no worries, I'm not going to unmute you. all right, Deb said, just received a LinkedIn message. She wants help writing content for 2 presentations. I want to say yes. What questions should I ask her? I've not written for presentations, but it's content, right, with research. Yeah. All right, so Deb, that's awesome. What I would do is, of course, not knowing exactly what's transpired so far, but let's just say she sent that to you through LinkedIn. Say yes. I know you want to say yes. Yeah, so say yes. You'll figure it out as you go. Now, the next step is yes. Could we schedule a brief conversation? Or depends on your work schedule and all that, Deb. You know, could you tell me a little bit more? You know, what type of presentation and what specifically are you looking for in terms of the content? And what do you already have available in terms of background materials? Those will probably be the 3 questions that I would ask. Don't throw like a list of 7 questions or anything like that. Stick to 1, 2, 3 tops right now. So in other words, make it easy for them to respond and to continue this thread. What do you have in mind? What do you already have? At least those 2. What are you working with right now? Like specifically, I'd want to know, do you already have an outline? Do you need help with that as well? You're starting from scratch. Usually that's going to come out when she answers the questions, but start there. Don't worry about, you know, you having to answer everything right now. So really, Deb, I would, if you feel more comfortable with it, keep the conversation for now digitally, ask those open-ended questions and see how she answers them. And then from there, it could go in many different directions. So we could kind of hypothesize what would happen here. But, you know, let's just say a likely scenario is, yeah, I kind of have a rough idea of, you know, I have a topic and I have a very, very rough outline, but it's kind of all over the place. So, yeah, I do need help organizing the ideas. Then perfect. I would say, you know, can you share that? You know, tell me what it's about. Share what you have, or you could say at that point that could be a good jumping off point in terms of, you know, taking it to a phone conversation. Great. You know, can we have could we schedule a brief 20-minute phone chat? You know, so you can share with me what you've got and. You know, we can figure this out. And then just walk through through session 6, right, through that qualifying process. And session 6 shows you how to lead that call and what questions to ask. And I would, just to kind of bring down the level of nervousness, keep reminding yourself that right now you're just trying to land a client. It's not about the income. It's not about maximizing what you charge. It's not about the fear of charging the wrong thing. Keep in mind, you're going to throw it at them first. Okay, well, what budget are you working with? And you got to be prepared if they could throw it back at you and say, well, I'm not really sure. What do you charge for something like this? You need to be prepared with something. And my suggestion would be, based on what I know about you, Deb, and where you're starting from, I would offer something that's low enough for her to say, heck yes, but not so low that she starts wondering if you're qualified, okay? So it's a balancing act. And when you throw a range at it, and still, I would still give her a range. I wouldn't give her a specific fee yet. Ask her, is that within your budget? So now you're throwing the hot potato back at her, okay? So that's kind of how I would handle that. Let me know, Deb, in the chat box if that helps, or if you have a follow-up question to that. Good stuff, guys. Great questions. Okay, let's see. Question from Andrea. Should we focus on small to medium-sized companies in the beginning versus large companies? Pros and cons. Andrea, let me see if I can find you here. Hey, how are you, Andrea?
Okay, how are you?
Doing well. Good to talk to you.
Good.
So So tell me, what's your target market?
Senior health, and I've sent warm emails to a variety, you know, small, medium, and large companies. It seems like I get a response from small to medium, but not the large companies. And I'm thinking the large companies go to big content marketers as their go-to for their work. I think that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, and it could be. It's really hard to tell. You know, one of the things about making decisions with this kind of thing is we don't, most of us aren't set up to send enough volume out there to get statistically valid results, right? So if you're telling me, look, I've sent 2,000 emails to large companies alone over the past few weeks, which would be like a ridiculous volume. Based on the results you've gotten, we would have enough of a statistical sample to be able to make some decisions. But because you can only send out so many, we really don't know with a high degree of certainty if that is the case. But you can still make educated guesses based on the response you've gotten so far. I know I would. So if that's what's happening, that you're getting some traction with small to medium-sized companies, I would just continue with those.
Okay.
You know, and here's the thing. It doesn't mean that you're going to give up on large. It's, all right, well, let me see where I can get some initial results. And let me build something with the ones who are responding. Let me try to turn some of those into clients. Once you have a few clients and some experience, then you can now start going after the bigger companies with a little bit more. I think you'll have better street level intelligence at that point. Because by then you will have known the dynamics of the business a little bit more. And you will have a better idea of which ones to go after if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. That makes sense. That's kind of what I thought. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, mid-sized companies, I've always said this, to me, that is a sweet spot in business-to-business writing and copywriting. Because they're, in other words, when I say mid-size, guys, don't ask me for a range of revenue because every industry is different. When I say mid-size, I'm talking about companies that are big enough to have several people in their marketing department, but not so many that we got multiple marketing directors. And when you look at them on LinkedIn, when you do a search, that you have like dozens of marketing people. That would be more of a large company. So what the cutoff is, you know, who knows? But enough of a marketing team that you can tell they're spending money on marketing, but not so small that they only have one marketing person and that's it.
Okay.
So mid-sized companies are often great. They don't have a lot of red tape. They don't have to run everything through legal. They have enough money to pay you. I've worked for large companies that are a real pain because, you know, everything's got to go through legal and they take forever to pay and they can be a pain. Not that all of them are like that, but I'm saying it's sometimes the large companies seem like, oh, they'd be great to work with. Not really.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, Jennifer has a question here. Again, guys, if you have a question, type in capital Q in the chat area and let me know. Gut check came in at 3 or 4, and I could definitely use the confidence boost and learning from doing some freebie projects. But I may have a paid project writing for one of my design clients. It's a 1,500-word newsletter. How much of a discount would you recommend offering? How big a project do you recommend for the freebies? All right, Jennifer, let me bring you in. Hey, Jennifer, how's it going?
Hey, Ed, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Cool. I'm doing okay. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. All right, so the gut check, 3 or 4. So, yeah, so it's kind of like, you know, on the fence kind of thing.
Yeah.
But if it's an existing client, that's different, right? Because they know you, there's trust.
Yeah.
So 1,500-word newsletter, how much of a discount would you recommend offering? All right. Have you had a conversation with them about money yet?
No. And we left it at that she was going to send me the proposal from the person who wrote it last year. And then I thought, well, I can see how much she charged, assuming that's in there, and come up with something from there. But she also, they're hiring an assistant. The first hiring process fell through, and it was someone who was going to write the newsletter in-house. So, you know, I may have to try to get at least some writing in there, you know, knowing that they may try to do it in-house.
Once they find somebody?
Yeah, they're in the, I think, final stages of hiring somebody else right now, and I don't know if that person's a writer or not.
Okay. Well, here's a way. One way I would probably approach it is you get that information, so you know what they were charging. And let's just say they were charging, I don't know, $800.
Hmm.
Then I would go back to her. So at least now I have you need an anchor right now. Like, you need some context. You know, are we talking $200? Are we talking $2,000? Right. So now you have an anchor. $1,800 is your starting point. I would have a conversation with her and just say, all right, so you're paying $800. You know, that could work. However, I know that you're also hiring someone. You might, you know, I'm guessing that you may want to try to do this in-house. You know, I would ask, and maybe I wouldn't assume. Are you also thinking about doing this in-house at some point once you hire this person? And let's just say, yes, possibly, but we need to get going with the first two issues. Then I would say, okay, so $800 is what you were paying. It'd also be helpful if you kind of knew how pleased they were, you know, with the previous person. And then I would say, what price point would make it worthwhile? Like, I would love to have your business there.
Mm-hmm.
I think we work well together, and I know I could do an awesome job for you. What, from a financial standpoint, what would make it worthwhile for you to just work with me on this?
Mm-hmm.
Just throw it at them.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I mean, here's another situation where it could go in many different paths. But hypothetically, let's just say that, well, I mean, it would be fine with $800, but, you know, since we're also bringing in this admin person, if, you know, could you do it for $600? Would that work?
Mm-hmm.
And then you can decide, mm-hmm. You know?
It doesn't matter what they say. I'll be like, yes.
Yes, but you don't want to say that, right?
Yes.
they don't need to know that, you know, whatever. Okay, we can pay you in, you know, pumpkin pie.
Oh, yes.
Because I would take that. Yeah. I would take that bet. So that, because, I mean, I'm thinking, and now you confirm that you're not just interested in doing one or two. And frankly, with recurring work, it doesn't pay over the long haul, guys. Now, remember, right now you guys need to say yes to everything because you're just trying to get some traction. But as your business grows, you don't want a lot of one-off projects because there's a cost involved in onboarding a new client or learning something new. And if you can't spread that cost across several iterations or several projects, then it's not going to be profitable.
Yeah.
So with newsletters, you need to do a few for one client before you can kind of get really efficient with them.
Mm-hmm.
So to do two for, you know, for a discounted fee, like you were asking, I mean, yeah, you're going to get some cash in the door, but it's not going to really be that profitable.
Yeah.
So I would play it like a chess master and figure out, okay, how can I get a real win here?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does that make sense? Does that give you some structure as to maybe how to approach it?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And the thing with this is that it's only an annual newsletter, so it won't come around for a while.
They may have other annual ones. Newsletter?
Yeah.
I'd never heard that.
Yeah, it's part of their fall fundraising effort with their folks who don't tend to be on email.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
So their end of year push is to bring in the people that they'll mail out postcards, mailers, that kind of thing during the year. And at the end of the year, they have the newsletter.
Gotcha. So this is not going to be, I mean, yeah, there's no opportunity to do more of this anytime soon. Can you see any other opportunities from a writing standpoint there with a client?
Possibly. They do an annual report sometimes. That, too, has changed. The last one was a postcard, too. But, yeah, they're always doing something. So there may be something else.
Okay.
And I do their website.
Well, if you think if there's potential for, if you feel that this is a good way to get them to see you as a writer, not just a designer, then it might be worth the investment of your time.
Yeah, and true. That brings up that the person I work with has been a good source of referrals. So that could be really helpful too.
There you go. Okay. Well, yeah. Factor all that in, but also, you know, make sure that you charge a fair fee for this.
Yeah. Okay. So for freebies, how big, like to me, that would be a lot to offer to do the newsletter as a freebie, but for other possible things, like what kind of scale scope do you think of as appropriate to offer as a free project?
As a free project?
Yeah.
I'm very flexible with that because, again, the goal is not to try to optimize that decision. Mm-hmm. The goal is just to get something.
Okay.
The one thing that I would be cautious about, and I think some of you have already experienced this, is if you're going, it would be websites.
Mm-hmm.
Web copy, especially if it's a new business or they're going to revamp their old website and you can help them with a new one. Here's why. If you do something like that, if it's an online project, you want to make sure that it's something they're going to go live with in a reasonable amount of time.
Mm, yeah.
Because you're not going to have a sample in that case if they're going to not take it seriously and never go live with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Okay, that's a really good point.
So those are the ones you need to be mindful of. But I'd say, you know, Jennifer, for someone like you, okay, so Jennifer, for those of you who don't know, so Jennifer is a designer. She's been a designer for a long time, but she is launching a writing business as well. And I think for you, even though you're kind of on the fence from the gut check quiz, you have a track record. So I really would try to charge something and just make it lower.
Okay.
Rather than zero, because you're not in a place where you need to charge zero.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And I wouldn't do anything, just to go back, like, okay, I wouldn't do a 20-page website. I mean, like some big projects like that.
Yeah.
You know, maybe anything that would normally go for $1,000 or less.
Okay.
Something like that.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Still scared.
Well, good luck. Let us know how it goes.
Okay. Thanks. I will try to make some progress on that. I'm in a tying up loose ends kind of mode right now. So hopefully stuff like that will help.
And if she doesn't in the proposal, if she like whited out what she paid last year? I would just flat out ask her, hey, this is great. Now I know better. I have a better idea now of what you're looking for and how they approach it. Would you mind sharing what you paid last year? That way I don't just throw something at you that's going to be completely out in left field.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Cool. Well,
good luck.
Thank you. And thanks for your help.
My pleasure. Just reading some of the notes here. Cynthia says, regarding my comments earlier about the imposter syndrome, even therapists struggle with this. Absolutely. Therapists go to therapists. Deb says, in response to my advice about this potential prospect through LinkedIn, it makes perfect sense. I know you told me this before, but keep pounding it in my head like you do. Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to do that. This gal owns a travel property management company in San Diego. I think she's more in my realm as opposed to the New York PR company owner, which bombed out. Of course, she asked in her message if I have written presentations, which I have not, but I can certainly write content. How do I get around that question? So, all right, what you need to do, you need to reframe it. Okay, so this is a great question, guys, when in any situation when a prospect says, okay, have you written X or do you have any samples of X and you don't? Your job is not to walk away or to give up. Your job is to reframe. Okay, now, if after the reframe they won't go for it, that's fine. But I would not give up on a situation without reframing first. Reframe is very simple. Reframe, you're being honest, but you're showing them a different way to look at it. So they want X, you don't have X. And you tell them, okay, I don't have a sample of X. However, here's what I have done, and here's what I do have experience doing. And here's how that is related to the thing that you're looking for. Not only that, but I also have experience in blank. Now, that part of the reframe is about other intangibles that you bring to the table. So industry experience, experience in this particular topic, anything around that, okay? Anything else that you can bring that's not related to the writing, that's really more related to your background, skill sets, experience, and so forth. Therefore, because I have this experience with these other projects that are similar, and I bring this other stuff to the table, I'm confident that I'd be able to do a good job for you. I would love the opportunity. That reframe, in conjunction with a very reasonable fee and ability to just turn it around quickly, has a very high chance of getting a yes. Okay, so that's the customer service piece. I mean, willingness to turn it around quickly and letting them know that you would love to do this and you're going to make them look good. Of course, when you say those things, yeah, that's kind of putting you on the spot. But you know what? That's a healthy thing. That's a good thing. And trust me, you guys would be able to do that. Okay, I think we undervalue our skills many times, and we assume that, oh, but I wouldn't be able to say that with a straight face because, you know, I'm sure they could find some others who could do a good job. You'd be surprised. First of all, most people don't do a good job. Most of our clients don't know how to do what we do, okay? And most writers out there suck. Sorry, but they do. They're not good writers. Worse yet, they're very unprofessional. They don't deliver on time. Basic business courtesy and professionalism go a long way in this business, okay? So I think if you reframe it like that, Deb, and or anyone else who faces that situation, your chances of getting the opportunity go up. I'll say one more thing, because this is something that everyone here struggles with, so this is why I kind of want to unpack this idea. We always assume in these situations that the prospect, like, we're under pressure. The prospect's not under pressure. We're under pressure. And it's really an unbalanced dynamic, right? So we're at their mercy. They have all the leverage, and we have none. And I want you guys to stop thinking that way. And I know it's very natural to think that way. I still think that way many times. I have to stop myself. It's in most cases, it's really a more balanced situation that you realize. Okay, let's just take this situation that Dev's dealing with. There's a good probability that this person, that this lady, I think she said it was late, as she, yeah, it's a she. This lady is under pressure and under the gun to get this presentation done. And she doesn't have the time to continue searching on LinkedIn and doing research on who to, you know what I'm saying? Like, busy people need to get things done. And she found somebody, and she and Deb, and Deb's engaging with her. Deb will do this reframe we just talked about. And many times, you know what? That's just good enough. Let me give her a shot. You know, if it sounds like she can do a good job, but, you know, if it's not like 100%, but it's 80, 90%, that's better than continuing to look for the perfect person. And most smart people know that adding one more day or several more hours to the search is not necessarily going to turn up a better person. And they also subconsciously know that they probably don't have the capability to know who's going to be the optimal choice. Okay, so don't underestimate the value of being the person she's engaged with right now, and just remember that this is a more balanced dynamic than you might be experiencing or you might be perceiving. Okay. Yeah, who is that that said Ready, Fire, Aim or something like that? Yeah, it's Michael Masterson wrote the book Ready, Fire, Aim. I think that saying's been there for a while. But anyway, Deb, go for it. Listen, I'm not saying, oh, guaranteed this is going to come through. I'm just saying do your best. Do the reframe. Add that customer service component there and that enthusiasm to do an awesome job for them. Put yourself out there. Put yourself on the line. And let's just see where it goes. Either way, let me know. I'm curious how it turns out. All right, Linda has a question here. I'm in a tech hotspot, but many companies seem to use ad agencies already. Would I contact the companies to confirm, and then if they use an agency, contact the agency? You could. I wouldn't go to the prospects assuming that already and say, hey, do you use an agency? But yes, there are some who do and some who don't. And I would say in tech, it's a mixed bag, Linda. So don't assume that it's going to be common. Again, this falls back into, I'm trying to find you here to see if we can have a conversation. Oh, here we go. Hey, Linda, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Yeah. So I wouldn't go under the assumption that most of them will be using an agency. I would just go, and if that's what they say, you could ask them who they use because you'd like to contact them to see if maybe you could write for them. I mean, that's certainly an option. But I think a better option might be, hey, that's great. Would you mind keeping my information handy in case anything comes up? I know that a lot of agencies sometimes can't take on more specialized writing projects such as white papers, for example.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wasn't going to go into it assuming, but just from what I've been seeing, either that or they're trying to learn how to do it themselves. So I would just send them a standard warm email. But if the answer comes back, oh no, we're with this agency and we're just totally happy, then I would. And I guess one of the things I've struggled with is, should I start out by working with some of the local agencies or just go directly to companies?
I suggest, in where are you in the program right now?
Well, I'm finishing up the positioning, but a lot of this is stuff I've been through, so I'm sort of just going through it for see if there's something new or different. So okay. I've actually got a whole website written, and I was starting to send some warm emails, and I said, I think I'd like a guide to keep me on target here. So
yeah, and by the way, were you able to make some adjustments to your website copy based on, well, you haven't been through the website copy.
I haven't been through that part yet. That's why I'm sort of like just turning through the positioning exercise and so I can get to that section.
Well, so listen, I'm all about Ready, Fire, Aim, right? And you know that about me. But I still do recommend that you go through the website copy section, because if you've been through the positioning, the website copy section is going to give you some great ideas for adjusting what you have right now that won't take you a long time. Mm-hmm. And then that's a natural progression into drafting really good warm emails.
Okay.
All right. So I wouldn't skip that step.
I hadn't planned to. I just hadn't got there yet.
Okay. So definitely don't skip that step. When you get there, don't don't worry about the whole agency thing. And then you'll see that in the roadmap, I put agencies kind of last as a backup. So I still suggest that this is a roundabout way of answering your question, but I would go after direct clients first and agencies as a backup.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking of working for an agency just as a way of having steady work, because my experience, whenever I've changed writing genres, basically, I learned the most and the fastest just by doing. So, but I think direct clients would be a better way to go in some ways.
Yeah, there's pros and cons. I just find that you're probably going to get better results faster with direct clients, especially in tech. And then you could use agencies as a backup.
Okay. All right.
You know, because what happens is when you, everything else being equal, when you land a direct client, the pay expectations, they're going to be better than working with an agency. And then that's going to give you a better foundation. And then agencies, you can pick and choose. There are a lot of agencies that pay peanuts. They really treat writers badly. All they want are writers for blog posts, and they only want to pay, you know, $50 a post and that kind of thing.
I think that, I've ran into those, like, comes out to 4 cents a word or something. And I've seen some of the work that I know has come out of an agency or a PR firm, and when you understand technology and you understand what they read, there's just like a little mismatch there. They have not quite hit the real point, you know? So I think that's one of my differentiators, and I want to protect that.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right. Okay, thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. Hey, guys, I'm just curious. So what's been most valuable for you so far, the conversation we've had? We had some great questions today. Let me know. Type in capital V in the chat area. Let me know what's been valuable, either something we talked about together or maybe something that came out of a conversation that I had with somebody else in the group. Capital V, and then let me know in the chat area. All right. I had a question here from Madalena. She says, I sent out 10 prospecting emails to friends, family, and close contacts this week. I'm taking the B approach in session 5. Pro bono to start is I don't have any samples yet. Would you suggest keeping a spreadsheet or system of who I contact and schedule follow-up just like we do for solid prospects? Yeah, great question. So with friends, family, close contacts, it depends on, I would make the decision, Madalena, based on where they fall in the list Kickstarter matrix. So if they are golden nuggets or really good connectors, I would send one more follow-up email if you don't hear back. If they're kind of lower level connections or helping hands, I would not necessarily follow up. Okay. So that's kind of how I think about it. Because you have to be a little careful, especially when they're helping hands, because with helping hands, you just don't know. There's a good chance that they may not be able to help you. So following up doesn't really add anything to it. And if anything, it could just kind of get a little bit weird. But definitely golden nuggets, follow up with those, and the better segment of your connectors. All right, so see some good stuff here for feedback so far on what's been most valuable. Jennifer said, I talked to my client about our possible writing project. Great. Matthew says, direct clients are always best. Yes, everything else being equal. Linda says, feedback on defining my target audience. Excellent. Nanette, reminding us how to reposition the other samples to make them relevant and make the connection to the client. Yeah, that reframe, right? Michael, we're all imposters. I thought it was just me. Ha! Ah, you're not alone. Madalena, okay, great. That makes sense. Good stuff. Laura says the advice about reframing was really helpful. Susan, imposter syndrome is perfectly normal. Push through. And then second, reframing when I don't have a specific sample. Good stuff. Deb says, don't underestimate the power of enthusiasm and customer service. Also, the turning around turning around the question about what have you done X. Great. Randy says, potential clients are under stress too. I'm qualified to be a solution to reduce their stress. Absolutely. Yeah, right place at the right time. You know, many times they just don't have the time. And if you get to them at just the right place, and even if everything's not perfect, if you know, you may have to do a little reframing, but that's it. We always assume that prospects are making extremely logical decisions based on criteria that they, and then they got a scoring mechanism. And you know what? At the end of the day, many people, especially busy people, are making decisions quickly. They just got to move on because they got a lot of things going on and they don't have time to overthink it. I love those kinds of clients because then when we're working together and I'm writing for them, they're not going to overthink the draft. You know, they're not going to just say, you know, I've had those kind of clients and they are real pain. Clients with a lot of extra time on their hands. All right. Questions, feedback. Type in capital Q just so I know that it's a question, something you want to talk through. And let me know in the chat area. It's an open floor right now. So if anyone's been shy or if anyone has a second question, you know, we could do a second round. You're more than welcome to ask away. I have the breakdown. Madeline, I have a question about the breakdown of session 5. Yeah, let me bring you in. Hold on. Here we go. You should be unmuted now. Hey, Madalena, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing good.
Good. Yeah, I just have a question because session 5, I don't have it open in front of me, but I know that I listened to the audio and read the printed portion handout. And so I'm still working on, you know, reaching out to prospects. But there's the second portion of session 5 has to do with LinkedIn. And I think there's another section as well, if I remember correctly, with video. Do you suggest that we, you know, do all of the reaching out to our contacts as much as we can first and exhausting that and then doing the second part of session 5 or doing it at the same time?
You know, it's completely up to you. I don't really have a specific formula for that. I think with LinkedIn, the big thing is just making sure that your profile is done the right way. Yeah. And let me just go there real quick. Susan's got her.
Yes. I think the profile portion that was discussed about just kind of like updating the profile was part of the web, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Session
so this
four.
Is, and you're talking about Susan's training.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's the way I would think about LinkedIn. It's there are people in the context of what you're trying to do right now, right? Searching, reaching out to the people you know.
Right.
There are people that you should definitely reach out to via email.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who, it's this is kind of more on the colleague side, that might be better to reach out through LinkedIn at first.
Right.
Maybe because you don't have their email address.
Yeah, like the email, you know, saying, I know you're connected to so-and-so. Would you mind introducing us? That makes sense to me. But I didn't know if it's something we should be doing in tandem or if it was, you know, like exhaust this first and then move on. You know, because like I'm not quite sure at what point do I even move on to session 6 because I feel like the prospecting thing just is a continuous thing from here on out.
Yes,
so I'm thinking
right.
Myself, how do I know when I've completed this section? I don't really know.
You know what I would do? I would, so you're right, because you're now at a, this is actually a milestone, a key milestone in the program. Mm-hmm. At this point, now everything else is really, it could come very fast.
Mm-hmm.
So I would hit complete and I would review session 6. Session 6 and 7 are basically about, okay, somebody said yes, let's talk. And,
right.
And now you got to figure out how you're going to lead that call. What are you going to say? What are you going to ask? So what I would do is once you start prospecting, I would simultaneously go through session six at least.
Right, in case
that way
responds.
You know what's in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't have to memorize it because the way it's structured, I got handouts and cheat sheets for you there. But yep. You need to kind of get a lay of the land so that you don't have this anxiety. Oh my gosh, what ends up happening once I do have to talk to somebody? And that way, at least you'll know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay. And of course, if you do get a hit, then you may want to go review it again. But at least you know what's in there, and it will be a lot easier and less stressful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can always go back to five again and do stuff that I missed or didn't get completed yet. But that's what I was wondering. I thought I'm sending out these emails to people who are, some of them very good connectors. And while I may not hear back for a few days, who knows, it could come up with something and say, hey, yeah, so-and-so. And then I'm like, well, because I'm doing the case of doing a few pro bono projects first so I can get some samples.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
I had one say to me, hey, I'll keep my eyes open. I can't think of anything right now, but have you written anything yet? And I said, well, no, not really, you know, but she's a close friend of mine. So it's not that she was like, there's no judgment there. but it was kind of like that, you know, this is kind of why I'm doing the three, but I guess that's good that she didn't pick up on the fact that I said I'm willing to do the first ones at no cost. Like she didn't pick up on the fact that I just need some samples, which is probably a good thing from the way that it was phrased. But it's kind of like that, you know, like when somebody comes back with the question, it's a little bit, it's different. You know, I'm sort of in the same boat as somebody else who has a different profession by trade and is still doing both. So it's one of those things that, yes, I have a lot of translation projects I've done. There's no problem there, but with the writing portion, and she knows me from my translation work. We've worked together a lot. It's a valid question. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And again, you remember what I said about this is a short-term problem, right? So right now you're trying to bridge a gap that once bridged, it's behind you. So this is a temporary problem. And just go back to your original question. I would say, look, if you don't have their email address or you just know it makes more sense to start with LinkedIn, start there. Now, you can go ahead and also use LinkedIn as a stealthy follow-up mechanism. So you reached out to Bob, you haven't heard back. Maybe you, a week or two later, you send a follow-up email, haven't heard back. Now, you go to LinkedIn, and let's just assume that you're connected on LinkedIn already, then, well, actually, let's take the scenario where you're not connected. You send the connection request, but not with a follow-up note, but more like, hey, Bob, I can't believe we're not connected here. Would love to connect with you on LinkedIn. Hope you're doing well.
Okay.
Kind of like. And you know what that will do? That will spark the, because many times, it's not that Bob doesn't want to respond. It's just that, you know, he's been busy.
Bob's busy, yeah.
And now it's like, oh, man, I feel so bad. I haven't responded. And that's what will do it, right?
Yeah, it's a top-of-mind thing. Sure.
Top of mind thing. All right, let's just say you are connected with Bob. That's the other scenario. Then you could look to see what he's posted recently and either comment on it or hit like.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. That's a less, you know, salesy way of doing it. I like that. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, totally. I teach this and people do this to me and I don't want to say fall for it because it's not a trick, but it still works on me. I had someone the other day who's been doing this really, really well. Mm-hmm. And finally I bit and I said, because the way she did it was she was liking my stuff and commenting, but not in a stalkish kind of way, you know, because sometimes people overdo it and I know what they're doing. And then, so she was just very, very well done. And then she gave me a suggestion. Hey, Ed, you know, I loved your video on X. Really well done. It gave me a great idea. I was thinking though, you know, you could get a lot more exposure and better results from that video if you added captions to it. And also let me show you what else you could add in terms of the text on top of it. And she gave me an example. It maybe took her 3 minutes.
Yeah.
But I was so impressed that we engaged in a conversation. And now we're talking about having a conversation like over the phone to see if maybe she can help me as someone whom I hire and pay to help me on LinkedIn, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that came from a kind of an indirect follow-up from on her part with LinkedIn.
Right. And well, and she was showing that she had some value to provide to you. So that makes sense.
Exactly. Okay. So that's the next step, right? You like something or you comment, and then maybe in a few weeks, now this requires you to track this stuff, right? So you remember to go back and see what Bob's doing. Mm-hmm. And maybe you offer an idea, you know, just like she did to Bob.
Okay. Well, and in the case, in my case, I mean, some of these people I'm looking at as connectors, not necessarily doing work for them. So it would be a little bit more roundabout than what she did for you. Does that make sense? I mean, I'm not going to these people because they don't have health and wellness topics for me to write about. So,
well, with connectors, here's what you do in social media, whether it's LinkedIn or Facebook, is you share a way that you can help clients.
Okay.
You know, one of the ways that I can help clients is with this, you know, so if you know of anyone in this, in a similar situation, or in this type of organization, I'd love to be able to help them.
Okay.
That kind of thing. Again, it's just, and by the way, this goes on. So even beyond now, as you land clients, talk about it on social media.
Okay.
Because what that does is for the people who've been on the fence and they'd like to refer you, you're giving them social proof.
That's true. Okay.
Cool.
All right. Thanks, Ed.
You're welcome. All right. Let's see. Linda has a question here. Maybe you cover this, but do you need samples directly related to your target audience? Great question. And yeah, I do cover it. And the answer, very straightforward, Linda, is you do not. Start with what you've got. Okay. There is a, you should see what I started out with. It was deplorable. I was going after software companies and my samples weren't even like real legitimate businesses. They were individual people. That's what I had. You're not looking for someone who needs to see all these samples in their target market, in their specific sector. You don't need to check all the boxes. You're looking for someone who is willing to give you a shot based on what they see today. Now, you're right that many of them, that's not going to be good enough, right? It's, they're going to want to see more. That's fine. It just means they're not a good prospect for you today. So you're looking for someone who is willing to go with whatever you've got right now. It could be an issue of timing. It could be maybe a trust. It could be whatever. There's a myriad of reasons why somebody would hire you. And as I mentioned earlier, this is really a short-term problem. Like, I talked to Madalena. You're just trying to bridge that gap right now. Once you get your first sample in this particular target market, you've solved a big part of the problem. And then you're able to leverage that sample to get another client. And then now you got two samples. So it's just one step at a time. But yeah, absolutely. In fact, let me type in, I want you guys to see, I wrote an article a few months ago, actually last year, on where I have two of the three samples that I started out with. And I'm going to put it in the chat box if you want to see it, Linda, or if anyone else wants to take a look. All right, I just dropped that link there, and you'll see. I mean, it just, so I can tell you from personal experience and from working with a lot of people, just start with what you've got. And I bet what you've got is better than what I started out with. Deb asks, in my conversation with the PR agency lady, I actually wrote a fake press release and a pitch letter to go along with it. Was that a mistake, given that she called off her phone conversation shortly after that, saying she was too busy and she would keep me in mind, or does it sometimes work to write up a sample? Yeah. All right, so Deb, you're automatically assuming that, you know, maybe that turned her off in some way. I would not assume that. In any situation where a client just suddenly kind of flakes out and says, you know, things have changed. And most writers automatically think that it has something to do with something they said or something that they lacked or they found you out or what. I'm telling you from personal experience, and not just my situation, but those of many of my coaching clients and being on the other side of the fence, there's a very high probability, 80-90%, that it has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with what you did, what you showed her. It just, things change. So don't worry about that. The real question is, hey, does it make sense to create fake samples kind of on demand to be able to show a client something? This is a controversial issue. Some people say yes, some people say no. I tend to lean on the no side, and here's why. Again, you're waiting for someone who's willing to hire you based on what they see today. If they don't see it, and that's not good enough, then they're just not a good prospect for you today. The second thing is it takes time and effort to do these, and it's many times you're not going to be able to create something overnight. And the third reason is the value is kind of disputable. You wrote something, but you didn't really learn that much because it was fictitious. And I'd rather see you do something pro bono for a client. Again, even though they're not paying you, the value of working with a real client and getting that experience is just tremendous. So if you're going to take the time and the effort, you're going to put in the effort to do this, I'd rather you do it for someone who can actually make use of the piece rather than try to create something for a fictitious company. So generally, that's why I tend to lean on the side of, you know, just don't do something overnight. If you have it, great, use it. But, you know, I wouldn't go out of my way. All right, Andrea has a question here. I've had two potential clients ask me if I repurpose what I write. I'm not sure what their concern is. I should have asked. What do you think? Is there a concern? Yeah, definitely. I would ask for clarification. It can't hurt. Like, don't feel like if you ask follow-up questions, clarification questions, that's going to make you seem like an amateur. It's not. I ask follow-up and clarification questions all the time. Because in this context, I wouldn't know what they mean either. So I would ask, well, what do you mean by repurposing? Are you referring to repurposing your content? If you wanted to repurpose some of your content into other pieces and you wanted to work with me on that, or do you mean that I would take your content and then repurpose it and use it with other clients? The first option that I just described here is very normal in clients do this all the time. You know, you help them write a white paper, and then they hire you to repurpose that into some blog post or turn it into maybe an ebook or a presentation, something like that. Okay. Perfectly legitimate. What's not cool is to take their content and then use that for another client because the description and the explanation of X would also work for this other client that I have. So ask for clarification. Don't automatically assume, and because I'm not sure. I've never been asked about using that content and repurposing for other clients. I've never had a prospect ask me that. But, you know, maybe they are concerned. Maybe something happened to them where they're just worried that, you know, that could happen. And in that case, just you want to be clear about the fact that you know, that's completely unethical. You are willing to sign a non-disclosure agreement with them, and you don't reuse content with other clients. All right, questions, feedback. I want to make sure I don't miss anybody here. All right, guys, I don't see anything else. Let's wrap this up. We'd love to know just a takeaway, a good takeaway from today's conversation. Just type in T, capital T, for takeaway in the chat area and let me know what was useful from today's session, one thing, even if it's a small nugget. And while you're there, also let me know, type in capital A and give me one action item. I want to make sure you leave these conversations with something practical, something useful, something you can take action on. Because ideas are really not valuable in and of themselves. They're only valuable if you implement them. So I want to make sure you have something tangible that you're going to write down, that you're going to commit to doing between now and our next call. So capital A for action item, capital T for takeaway. Madalena says, takeaway, super useful ways to follow up with people. Yeah, good stuff. Follow up is essential. And by the way, guys, don't ever feel like I'm bothering people. Look, if you do follow up in a very natural, organic way, the way I do it is I pretend that I'm in their shoes. Like, well, what kind of email would I feel is fine, you know? And I kind of think of it that way. You're not bothering people. As long as you're normal and, don't be a jerk. Corey says, action item, reach out to some agencies in my niche as I continue warm email prospecting. Fantastic. Yeah, Corey, make sure to go through that material in session 8. I'll show you how to do that there. Madalena, action item, create a spreadsheet and schedule when to follow up with folks I've reached out to, including via social media, and open up session 6. Yeah, absolutely. There you go. Laura, top takeaway, imposter syndrome. Yeah, it's a real issue for all of us. Linda, finish positioning exercise for the top action item, and ready, fire, aim for the top takeaway. Absolutely. There you go. I like to say, jump and you'll grow wings on the way down. Terry says, top action item, get my website up. Randy, top action item, send email introductions to local agencies. Yeah, great. Laura, top action item, submit website for review. Look forward to that. Nanette says, top action item, submit in response to client questions with explanation of my other type of samples. There you go. Jennifer, top takeaway, lots of useful ideas about talking about money with prospects and clients. Also, I've never announced working with a new client. It's good to know I should start doing that. Yeah. Jim, top takeaway, clarification, I'm moving on to session 6. And then action item starts session 6. There you go. Good stuff. Yeah, I've laid that out so that it's easy to review. So I would go through it beginning to end, take notes, and then it's set up in the handout specifically so you can go back to it in a hurry. Because most people, when they need that, they need it and they need it quickly. And I've been there, guys. I hate training where when you need it, it takes forever to go through it. Like, man, just give me the highlights, you know, give it to me in a way that I can quickly scan it. And I've already gone through it once, and now I can really implement it. So that's how I've structured that. Michael says, top takeaway, I'm good enough to do the job for the prospect. There you go. Jennifer Dyer, action item, wrap up session 4, follow up about the newsletter. Good luck with that. Let us know how it goes. Michael, top action item, talk to a prospect. Fantastic. Michael, good luck. Susan, top takeaway, looking for someone who's willing to go with what I have to show today. And then action item, fill the gap email where I saw a position listed. Oh, there you go. Matthew, at what point should I start session 8? Should I go through it while still sending coach emails? Yeah, cold emails. Yeah, absolutely, Michael. I think where you are right now, it does make sense. So if you've already gone through session 7, go ahead and review session 8. Because it's going to give you some stuff about, okay, what do you do from here as you start getting responses from people who say, you know, thank you, we don't have a need right now, but I'll keep your information handy. You know, what do you do with that? Okay, and those are going to happen. So I think for you, based on where you are, it makes sense to review session 8. And again, that's another session that will be helpful as you move along and you're going to kind of keep referring to. So yeah, go for it. All right. Anybody else? Good stuff, guys. Love your enthusiasm. Love that you guys are just pushing through. I know this stuff is not necessarily easy. It's not comfortable. A lot of these things are not comfortable. I think that's a good sign. If you're feeling resistance, you know, that's a good sign that you're pushing forward and that you're pushing yourself. Deb Dickerson says, top action item, don't write spur of the moment, only show what you have. Yeah, I mean, listen, if there's a situation where you feel, you know, it makes sense. I had a coaching client who did a few blog posts that way, and it did pay off for her. But again, many times, Deb, it's just better to try to find a client you can help, even if it's going to be for very little or for almost nothing. And Deb, good luck with that prospect for that presentation. Be curious to know, if you don't mind telling us in the Facebook group how that turns out, or if you got any follow-up questions, if I can help you there. Okay. All right, guys, a great session today. Thanks for bringing some great material here to the conversation. I hope this was useful. It sounds like it was. And we'll continue the conversation in the Facebook group. You guys take care. Have a great rest of the week and fantastic weekend. Talk soon.